Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course I'm joined with Couture, or joined by Couture, not with him. I guess I am with you right now. This is already starting off great. How you doing, Couture?
I'm doing fine.
All right, everybody. So Couture and I have been talking. We have the, you know, couple weekly phone calls. We just shoot the shit, and we were talking about 1998 WCW, and that's where we left off. And the reason it's taken so long for us to get back to WCW 1998 is because it was so miserable at the time. And I love WCW. I truly love NWA and WCW. I could watch it all day long. And so we decided, hey, you know, maybe we will eventually go back to 1998 WCW. But we never did, or we never did 1990, we never did 1991. And those were two good eras. Those are two good eras.
We actually started with 92.
Yeah, we started with 92.
About a year or so ago. So.
Yeah, so I think we're going to get back into that. First off, today I had my buddy Jerry over, and we were watching like a bunch of old WCW, because I actually loaned him, I got the set, like the history of WCW, like a long time ago, I don't remember. And I loaned him that set because he remembers WCW, and he even says, like, he was a WWF guy when he was young, but because he was young, he says that he thinks that he'll respect it more now that he's older, which is true. I think he probably will.
Yeah.
So we watched, like, a bunch of different stuff. We watched Capital Combat with RoboCop. We watched that today.
Yeah.
And there was a – that's – that Steiner Brothers versus Doom match on there, what a great match. That was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, that was a great match.
Do you remember that the tombstone that Rick Steiner does to Ron Simmons in that match? It's disgusting. It's like it looks like a pile driver, but he goes down to the tombstone, and Ron Simmons just flies to the mat. It was pretty sick.
He picks him up like a regular pile driver and just drops to his knees or something?
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, God. Horrible. But it was wonderful,
too. Like one of the best Frankensteiners I've ever seen on Ron Simmons in the match.
Yes. Oh, my God. I honestly think after this is over, I'm going to watch that Frankensteiner again. Because even my buddy Jerry, I've discussed this before. My favorite tag team ever is the Steiners. They're the best tag team to me of all time because they were so great. They were so great. They had like the hard-hitting type of matches that I was into. So who's your favorite tag team ever?
My favorite tag team ever is Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson.
That's a really good pick too. I like them a lot too. And they had matches with the Steiners, correct?
No, it was
Arn Anderson and Bob Eaton had matches with the Steiners. I know that.
Yeah, Arn Anderson and Bob Eaton had matches with the Steiners. Tully was supposed to come in, but he failed a drug test, so WCW didn't want him.
Yeah. Yes, he was starting that blow. That was his fault.
Instead, we got Ole Anderson, who at this time was only 200 years old, as opposed to the 800 years old he is now.
Yes. Oh, God. Ole Anderson is not someone I'm a big fan of. So, okay. So we're going all the way back to 1990. I was 7 years old. And that's why I got into wrestling was 1990. But I didn't follow it closely because I was seven. So the way this is going to go is because I remember vividly 1991. So 1990, I remember a lot of it, and I've watched a lot of it. I've watched, a ton of the DVDs. I have a lot of the stuff. So you're going to go through with the review, and then I'm going to make my comments, and you know what I mean. It's going to be great, though, because this is good stuff. So,
and we may get through it a little quicker because this is back during, like, the squash match era. There's going to be a lot of squash matches. We can just,
but even, like, if there wasn't even that, the squashes, like, were still pretty, they were still pretty long, you know? Like, we watched.
Yeah, they had good squash. They had good jobbers back then. That could,
yes.
You know, go out there and have a good match just to show, you know, just kind of an exhibition of what the guys could do and stuff like that. Very good stuff.
I was watching a show today where the opening match was the Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express. And
mm-hmm.
That match went, like, obviously that's happened 1,000 times, but that match went like 30 minutes. It was the opening of the show. I'm trying to think of what show that was that I was watching.
Was it a pay-per-view?
It was a pay-per-view.
Was it Wrestle War?
It was Wrestle War. Yes, it was. And I put
that's
it
the one where they
thinking,
did the shadow box. Jim Cornette did the boxing with the referee.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Your memory is awesome, Petrer. Just tremendous.
It's just too bad I couldn't have applied my memory to real life stuff that matters.
This is real life. All right. Let's go ahead and start it. 1990.
Go ahead and
give everybody a landscape of what's kind of going on. What, you know, where we're at right now.
Of, I think probably the best year of WCW. This was coming off the year with the big Ric Flair Classic Series with Ricky Steamboat and Terry Funk.
Okay.
Which is, two of the best programs I can remember back then. And
yes.
They ended with the Night of the Iron Men round robin tournament at Starrcade with it was Ric Flair and Great Muta and Sting and Luger in a round robin tournament, and then you had Doom, the Samoans, the Steiners, and the Road Warriors in a Iron Man tournament, and Sting won the singles Iron Man. He defeated Ric Flair in the finals, and the Road Warriors won the tag team Iron Man. So they move it into 1990. The Horsemen have returned. They had it was originally supposed to be Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard returning with Flair, but as we said, Blanchard, he failed a drug test before he left the WWF, and because he was leaving, WCW just magically somehow got wind of it, so they cut their deal with him, and we're only going to bring Arn in, and that pretty much signaled the end of Tully Blanchard's like career in a major federation at that point in time, which kind of pissed me off because it was like I said earlier, my favorite tag team. And I was looking forward to them against the Steiners. Instead, we got Ole Anderson coming in, who's I never cared much for Ole Anderson. He just.
You should have.
I've seen one arm bar for 20 minutes. I've seen them all for 20 minutes. You know, I don't need to see any more Ole Anderson. He's a good talker, but I never cared much for his work. But they came in, and it was him and Flair and Arn Anderson. And they were going to. They reformed the Horsemen. They were looking for the fourth Horseman, and it ended up being Sting here in the beginning of 1990. So let's start with, I guess this would be the first TV show of 1990 was the NWA Power Hour, which I think was on Friday nights. I think it was still on Friday nights at this point. And let's see what it had. We had an opening segment with Jim Cornette in the arena, in which he said he wasn't going to do commentary with Jim Ross out of spite for having to be in Peoria, Illinois.
I don't blame him.
And it included Gordon Solie hosting a segment of the Wrestling News Network. Do you remember that?
I do remember the Wrestling News Network.
They covered WWF and other companies on there, too.
Yes, they did. Weird. And I really liked that because it was like they would, like I remember distinctly, they would bring up the. There was that storyline with Rick the Model Martel and Jake Roberts being blinded. Do you remember that? And just hearing Gordon Solie talk about that, it was crazy. Yeah,
and he would talk about I think he talked about like the Roddy Piper Bobby Heenan feud on Primetime Wrestling. When he beat up Bobby Heenan, who was supposed to be Santa Claus, and told all the kids that Santa Claus didn't exist, so Piper beat him up.
And
it was just weird at that time because none of the companies ever, especially not the WWF, none of the other companies really recognized them or talked about them unless it was to say something bad, you know, to put over their own company or something. So I don't know, that's kind of strange. And
I thought it was all it was strange in a way, but I thought it was also really cool because it was different, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And somebody it didn't last for long. It lasted a few months, but that was about it. Then they stopped doing it. Let's see. Gordon Sully was the host of the Wrestling News Network this week, and he predicted the NWA World title and tag team titles would change hands at least once in 1990. That's going out on a limb right there, ain't it?
Yeah, what a bold prediction, Gordon.
I made that prediction today. The WWF title is going to change hands at least once in 2012. See,
I don't know, though.
You fucking idiot. It'll change 10 times in 2012.
Yes. Yeah, you see, that's going out on a limb, saying it'll change at least 12 times. It's not even really going out on a limb either. It's just being honest.
Shows you how different stuff was back then. The
man,
predictions
I gotta go on a rant real fast. I gotta go on a rant real fast because and I do this all the time, and I'm sorry. But I was talking about it like with my buddy today. We were saying like, why isn't wrestling like it was? And I know I sound like an old angry fucker, and I know that, and I'm sorry. Like, I'm just bitter. But, like, we're watching that Doom versus Steiner Brothers match. They don't have matches like that anymore.
They don't have wrestlers like that anymore.
No, there's no one like that. There's no team in wrestling that are like the Steiners. There's no one out there that are like that. Or like Doom. Doom was awesome. What an underrated tag team. They were good.
Wrestlers today, I don't know, something about them today, none of them look like real men like they used to back in the old days.
No!
They all look like a bunch of young punks.
Exactly, exactly.
There's nobody looking like Arn Anderson or, you know, Roddy Piper or Terry Funk or guys like that anymore. Everybody's just, I mean, it's like everybody looks like 25 years old.
Because I know that, like, if I'm at a restaurant with my wife or something, and Justin Gabriel, you know, starts talking shit to her, I know for a fact I'm going to get up and I'm going to try fighting his ass. Because I think I could probably beat his ass. But if Arn Anderson, I would be like, I would still try, but I know I would probably get my ass kicked because he looks like a tough dude. You know what I mean? Like Vader. Vader could kill me. I don't feel that way about Brodus Clay or, you know, or Husky Harris. You know, we don't need those kind of fat wrestlers. I love the era of the fat wrestler. I've talked about this before. I love the fat wrestlers. They were great. And we don't have any of them anymore. And it's ridiculous. It's stupid because, like, the whole, I don't want them all to be pretty boys. I don't want them all to be, you know, like today I was watching Big Josh. Big Josh looks like a wrestler. I watched a match Big Josh versus Black Blood. That was awesome. The Lumberjack match, that was a good match.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm talking about, Contreras.
I mean, the closest thing you got to, like, people, to, like, the old days, you could say a guy like Triple H, you know?
Yeah.
He looks like a real man. Like,
he does.
A little back then.
Shawn Michaels.
Maybe even, you know, I'd go far, so far as to say, you know, Randy Orton reminds me of, like, the old days.
Randy Orton lately, especially.
Yeah.
I was watching SmackDown the other night, and Randy Orton came out and did the RKO on Kane. I was actually watching it maybe this morning. It was last night, maybe. But I was, like, thinking, like, man, you know what? He actually looks like a wrestler now. He looks like he's, you know, a badass now. And it's taken him forever to get there. But
We got three people on hold.
Let's take one.
Screen name Day Crew, you're on the line.
Hey guys, this is Crumbly in Ohio. How are you doing tonight?
What's going on, Crumbly?
Long time no see, man.
Yeah, it's been ages. It's been ages and that. It's been ages. I have a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
What is your first memory of wrestling?
I could tell you mine first. I've talked about it before. It was Terry Funk attacking Ric Flair after Ric Flair won the the world titles on a cheater box, like at my grandma's house, and my cousin was watching it.
I too read Easter. The Black Box as a kid. It was amazing.
When I was, it was 85, and I don't know, I was flipping channels one day and came across, obviously I knew what professional wrestling was, but never really watched it. I came across, they had the Rock and Roll Express against Ivan Koloff and Crusher Khrushchev for the NWA tag titles. It was the whole match was the entire 1 hour show. It got me hooked from there. So.
Wow.
How could you not be hooked from that? I remember.
And then, like, and when wrestling got hot again, like in the mid 90s, we had DirecTV and we had, I guess we say, like an electronic expert that knows how to produce those little DirecTV cards. So,
yeah,
we watch all that shit for free.
Oh, that is tremendous. I do remember, though, what actually got me hooked on wrestling, because after that I was a pretty casual fan. I would watch it on occasion, and like I've gone back and watched like a lot of stuff. But do you remember the Ric Flair, I think it was Tatsumi Fujinami, like back and forth stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff is what hooked me to wrestling. Because there was that, like, controversy of, like, who's the champion and stuff. And I remember thinking, like, wow, who is the champion? Who is, you know, because I knew who Ric Flair was before I knew who Hulk Hogan was. And I remember people telling me about Hulk Hogan, and then I started watching WWF, and I love WWF, but it never did for me what the NWA and WCW did. Nothing.
I was never, you know, just speaking personally, I was never a WWF guy at all, and still am kind of bitter. Like, all of these years later, I still have that little chip. Yeah.
I've always, as you know, Crumbly, I have an Angels tattoo.
Yes,
And I've always said that I was going to get tattoos of things I love. Like, I love, you know, different variations of things, and one of them is WCW. And I've said it for years that one day I'm going to get that old school blocky WCW logo tattooed on myself.
Right in the middle of your forehead.
Yeah, I would never do that.
I think that would go over well.
No way. I could never do that. But like, I mean, like, still to this day, I'm 29 years old, and I still at least watch. Dedicate myself 2 hours a week at least to old WCW that I just watched because I mean I love it so much. It's a part of me. It's something that'll never not be a part of me.
Here's a question, Sinbad. Did you really get that Miss Doubtfire tattoo?
No, I did not. I was just fucking around.
Okay.
No, I was just trying to get reactions from people because like when I saw it, I laughed forever. I laughed forever.
I saw the tattoo. I was laughing my ass off because I remember that scene from the movie.
I would get that tattoo if that is another question. I would definitely get that. Because my buddy, we were talking about it today. He's like, would you actually get that? I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, but it's on you forever. I was like, but it will never not be funny. There'll never be a moment that I could look at that and it's not funny anymore.
There will never be a context in which that is not at least a little entertaining.
That's why, like I say about the WCW thing, there would never be a time, because WCW's dead.
Yep.
Nothing can happen to it to make me love it less.
Over 10 years of death.
Yes, over 10 years of death. And, probably, do you love it any less now than you did 10 years ago?
I love it way more because I've sat through the last decade of TNA. So,
yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
I love it more than I did.
Oh, it's just wonderful. Oh gosh! One day I will sit down and I will feel the pain. I will bleed for WCW, just so they know that wasting those hundreds of millions of dollars was worth it to one man.
The boys in the back will appreciate your sacrifice. Love the show, guys. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to listening to the rest of it.
All right,
okay,
thank you.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Area code 917. Who's this?
Hey, Couture, hey, Sinbad, this is One Silver from the board. How you fellas doing tonight?
What's going on, man?
What's shaking, man?
Hey, I love the flashback shows from when you guys did it 2 years ago. I'm glad you guys back. I just called in. What have you been talking about so far as 1990 goes?
We literally just started.
Yeah, we had just gotten into like the first NWA Power Hour show in 1990, and that's when we started getting phone calls. So we haven't really gotten into much yet.
Hey, Katrina, the 1989 Power Hour and 1990 NWA Power Hour shows probably the best television shows in wrestling, don't you think?
The best, I don't know the best. I mean, I liked all the shows back then. You know, like the Saturday night show, the main event, worldwide, all that stuff. You know, there's all of it was really good.
What show?
No partial, you know, like 505 on Saturday nights. That's still my time.
What show was it? Was it worldwide that Terry Funk and Chris Cruz?
Funk and Crispy Cruz.
Yeah, they were a great combo. Don't you think? I love those two. They had great chemistry together.
Yeah, they really did.
Way better than when Chris Cruz would call in from on the road, and then he'd make some like really shitty weasel joke to Bobby Heenan.
Hey, Sinbad, I share you. Even though I'm from New York, and I started watching wrestling in '81, and the WWF was my territory, I love WCW so much more. From when it was the NWA and then walked into WCW, and nothing has replaced it since. Matter of fact, I don't even watch today's current product. I watch the classic stuff. I mean, there should have been a way they could have kept WCW around. It's just a tragedy that organization was allowed to falter and die.
You know what? You know what? I'm going to go on record and say this. I'm glad. I'm glad that it went away, because the direction it was going, it was going to become TNA, and I felt like towards the end of it, they were starting to tarnish their legacy. And I didn't want them to go on another 10 years, because you got to think, TNA is what WCW would have been. That's how I really think that it would have been. So
was it the plan, had Bischoff bought WCW, was to have Paul Heyman as the booker? You think that would have continued to morph into the insanity that was going on, or would have gotten better?
I don't think so, because I think Paul had already been set to come to WWF when ECW was going downhill.
Yes, he was already ready to go. And just real fast, one thing about that is like I went to those first couple of TNA shows, and I talked to Jeremy Borash, and Jeremy Borash had told me, and he told me a couple of times, because I had asked him again later, that Eric Bischoff had a plan to do the X Division and you know, to push the cruiserweights, as the geeks on the message boards will say. But that's what his plan was, supposedly, was to go with like an X Division type thing. And you got to think, TNA, that was their whole thing when they first started. Oh, we're going to push the cruiserweights, we're going to do that. But look, now it's the same old shit, but even worse. So it's not even...
And Bischoff, at the time when they were getting WC, trying to buy WCW, I don't think they even had the money TNA had. They did. I mean, TNA has like a whole energy company behind them, and I'm sure that's much more than what Bischoff had behind him.
But didn't Bischoff have some financial backers with major money trying to buy the company?
Yes, he did.
I think so. I never knew like how big of a backers it was. So
yeah, it was. It was there was quite a few backers with them. Yeah, it was Fusion Entertainment, and I remember because like, there was a lot of money going in there, and they were doing, because I've read Bischoff's Big Book of Bullshit, and I've read The Death of WCW, and I've read, like, you know, I've read all these books about it, and I've done research, and like, I've looked through, I mean, everything. I'll even go on like random message boards just to see what people say, just to like acquire all that information of like, and it's almost always saying like there was a little bit of money there. I mean, they were going to let a lot of people go, but.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows, would he have let Hogan go? That was Hogan's, Bischoff's Hogan's buddy.
He would have been back in eventually, Hogan.
Yeah, he would have been. You're right.
So, I mean.
And what did WCW sell for? Like, what, maybe $3 million or something?
Yeah, $3 million.
Yeah.
Now, that's just like, I'd just buy it for the, they probably just bought it for the tape library.
And how much you think they made off the tape library?
Sure. They've gotten a hell of a lot more use than WCW did that when they actually had the library.
They had the Best of Starcade. They put the Monday Night Wars DVD out. They used footage like on Rick Flair DVD.
The Horseman.
They had I mean, they have like all the footage. There's that Clash of the Champions coming out. There was that Best of Monday Nitro. I mean, you got to think that's money, money, money coming in. So I mean, it all adds up. If you're asking whether or not it was a good investment, you know it was.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, back the only place that want to work in the wrestling business is in the video library at WWE. That's about it. I'd be making DVDs all day.
That'd be a great job.
Oh, God.
All those.
I would be sitting there watching all day long, dick in hand, with a big smile on my face. That'd be the greatest job in the world.
1990 was a great year. Back to 1990, one of my all-time favorite tag teams, and I know you guys will probably be talking about them throughout the series of 1990, was Doom. Butch Reed's one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. And Couture, I know, grew up in the, I believe, Mississippi, Mid-South area. And Butch Reed was
Mississippi, Louisiana.
Yeah. Couture, talk about Butch Reed, his run in 85 in Mid-South. And I mean, he was just a great babyface in Mid-South. And then in 90, I just loved the tag team of him and Ron Simmons.
Yeah, him and when he was in Mid-South, I know he had I didn't actually see much of his run in Mid-South because I had just gotten on to NWA at the time and just kind of discovered Mid-South a little bit later. But he was, I mean, they had him programmed with Ric Flair, and they would do, like, you know, Ric Flair comes in and drops a non-title or a pinfall to Butch Reed, and so they build up, you know, like the big world title match the next time. And then with him and Ron Simmons, they're a perfect team together because they're like a black version of the Steiner brothers. You know, they just beat the shit out of you.
Except Couture, they took bumps. Steiners never took bumps. Butch Reed and Ron Simmons took some hellacious bumps.
I still remember Ron Simmons' spine buster they used to whip out all the time.
And they both did the foot tackles off the ropes. And in 90, they had some great matches with the Horsemen, especially at Havoc and Starrcade.
Yeah, they had the big match with Barry Windham, the street fight with Barry Windham and Arn Anderson in Starrcade that year.
Oh, that was a great, great, great match. And the funny thing was, when they had the mask on, everybody knew who they were, and they were basically high-class jobbers. When they took the mask off, it was like their skills came back.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And then they put Teddy Long with them, which was a good fit at the time. So,
a gassed-up Teddy Long. Teddy Long looked like he was on the juice back then.
Yeah, he was. He had a freaking six-pack, man. But hey, we better get to that.
He was almost
call.
As big as Butch Reed.
Yeah. We got to get to the other call once, Silva. Thanks for calling,
man. All
right, man.
Hey,
I appreciate it.
Fellas, keep doing a great job, and I'll keep listening. Just let me just listen. I just want to stay on listen.
Okay,
all right,
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Okay, area code 219, you're on the air. Who's this?
Oh, hello, everybody. This is Louis Armstrong.
Wow, Louis Armstrong, what's going on?
Oh, how you doing, everybody? I love the show.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm so glad that you're calling.
I just had a quick question.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, I got to back up a little bit. I heard at the beginning of the show that you two don't like Ole Anderson.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes. Why would we say that?
Please explain why, because I think he's one of the best wrestlers I've ever seen. And one of the best managers I've ever seen. He did manage Ric Flair and Paul Ellering and even Sid Vicious.
Paul Ellering? What did he manage Paul Ellering? when was it that Ole Anderson?
I could have sworn he did.
Paul Ellering? Like Paul
Ellering,
was the manager of the Legion of Doom, Paul Ellering. When did Ole Anderson manage him? Contreras, help me with this.
I don't think he ever managed him. I know they were in Georgia at the same time.
Wasn't Paul Ellering a wrestler?
He was at one time. I don't think Ole Anderson wouldn't manage him back then.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Well, Louie Anderson.
Are you shooting like Ole Anderson when he did that racist thing with Rocky King?
Well, how do you feel about racism?
Racism? What kind of question is that to ask one of the best jazz musicians in the world?
All right, Louis, we better get back to our show.
I'm sorry, but one last thing, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
I do love the show, and I got a song for you.
Oh, thank you.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Bye-bye. All right. Had to be a friend of yours.
No, I have no idea who that was.
Oh, it's the same area code as you, so that's why I was asking.
Yeah, actually, that was, I believe that was my buddy that was over today. he's a huge fan of the show.
That the one that called in Bill Clinton one time?
A couple of times, yes, he was Bill Clinton.
This show's gone totally off rails.
I don't know. Yeah, it is. We haven't even really started talking about 1990 yet, Couture. We've had a prank call by a fake Louis Anderson.
Louis Armstrong.
Louis Anderson would have been way better, actually.
Yeah. He did a good impression, right, though, I'll say that.
Yeah, that was a pretty good impression. He does a pretty good Louis Anderson impression, too. So, all right,
okay, we were back on the Power Hour, the first Power Hour of 1990. And in the first match, well, we had a woman was a guest on Terry Funk's Grill, which was, for those that don't know, it was kind of like the Piper's Pit type segment with Terry Funk. He was interviewing different guests, and woman was a guest, and She refused to look at Norman's painting because Norman was smitten with her and was painting a picture for her, but she didn't want any part of it. I love Norman. Norman was awesome.
All right, for people that do not know who Norman the Lunatic is, he was also Sebastian Booger. He was Friar Ferguson. His Mike Shaw,
Mucking,
he was from.
He was Mucking Thing from Stampede.
Yes, and he just. For a big guy, that guy could work. Like, I have, like, a Best of Stampede DVD, and he has a couple of matches with Owen Hart on there. Oh, man, tremendous.
Well, look at that. He had some good matches with Brian Pillman in WCW.
Yeah, like, he was a good.
He was one of those big guys that would go up for everybody. You know, most big guys didn't like being slammed, but he'd let people slam and suplex him. Kind of like Vader. Vader would do that, too, with some people, you know.
Vader could move for a big guy. All right,
yeah.
Funk ended up kicking her off the set.
Yeah.
And then there was a promo before there was a commercial by Jim Cornette talking about Bobby Eaton facing the NWA World Champion Ric Flair during the main event.
Yeah, that would be the Sunday main event.
Yes, of course.
On every Sunday, which was the theme that I played at the beginning of the show. So,
what a good show.
Tom Zink pinned Galaxian number 2 with a drop kick from the middle turnbuckle at 10 minutes and 17 seconds. And during the bout, Jim Ross announced that Teddy Long would unveil the new skyscrapers and that Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson would return on WCW Saturday night. And that next week, Arn Anderson would face the Great Motor for the TV title on the Power Hour.
See, Arn Anderson was a babyface at this point, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was such a weird role for him to play because Arn Anderson's like the grizzled veteran. And another thing, where were Ricky and Robert? Where were they at?
Let me see. They had left and they'd come back in like 88 and they left after a couple months they had left. I don't think where they were. Maybe they were in Memphis because they did a lot of stuff. They came out of Memphis originally. So I think maybe they were in Memphis and doing some independence, maybe some stuff at the AWA or something like that. So this is their big return.
And
Galaxian number 2, I'm pretty sure, was Tom's Dink defeat. I'm pretty sure that's Danny Davis of OVW fame.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Watching these old WCWs and NWAs today, Tom Zink was a pretty good worker. Like he could go. I thought
he's the guy that got that win streak near the end of the year.
Yes, and he was really. I mean,
yeah.
He could work.
I mean, he was a great worker.
Yeah. I liked him a lot, and I thought he was kind of underutilized, but gosh, man, the talent pool that they had was, they were flooded with talent, man.
And then we go to the main event in which Arn and Ole Anderson defeated Jake Victory and Rip Morgan, the New Zealand Militia, a.k.a. the Royal Family, with their manager, Lord Littlebrook. And Arn pinned Morgan after hitting him behind the referee's back with Littlebrook's cane. So
the best part about this is, Ole Anderson was a babyface then.
Yeah. Ole Anderson at times did make a decent babyface.
Because he was older?
Yeah, I guess because he was older. He just had, he could get fired up and when he was in the ring and looked better as a babyface. Plus, he could talk. So, but he made a pretty good babyface at times.
I guess I could see that. I just need to watch more. I just need to watch more because I was telling everybody, some of the stuff I'm fairly lost at, so I'll be learning with all of you. So I'll just be asking questions that I'm thinking. So hopefully it helps some of you people, learn this a little bit better. All right, worldwide.
Here, I got a clip of Ole as a babyface. You want to hear it?
Yes, sir.
You're looking at the original horseman, The Rock. He and Gene Anderson, the greatest tag team combination in wrestling history. And what did he do? Ole Anderson opened his arms to Ric Flair. The rest is destiny. Ric Flair, the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. And then to complete your tradition, the original four horsemen. Who comes in but Arn Anderson to complete the unit? And then when Gene Anderson went down, it created a big boy. And what happens? Ole Anderson opens his arms to Tully Blanchard.
JJ, wait just a minute. I believe he said that we let an outsider in, is the way he put the terminology. Yeah, he might have said that, but this outsider, JJ, right here, world television champion, the proof is in the pudding.
You got
Am I right or
that's
wrong?
Exactly
that's
right. And here's Ole. Is that supposed to be something that you want to say to me or what?
If the shoe fits, wear it, Ole. If you'd have been taking care of business instead of that snot-nosed kid, you'd be...
Oh, goodness gracious.
Get him, Ole.
Okay, fans, okay. Obviously, we're still talking about what happened. All the fans looking at each other talking. This is, we have a match to go in the ring here in just a second, but this is big news because Ole came right out. I was assuming for an interview, and we were just talking about how great Ole and Arn Anderson were together in the ring and the horseman and the whole deal. And
this doesn't happen to the horseman now.
Well, we have no idea what is going to become of this, but obviously it's major news. We have to go to the ring, and hopefully we'll get some quick.
We didn't give Ole enough time to come out.
Listen, the horsemen are very intense individuals. Sometimes emotions have a tendency to get a little high strung. And a couple of the horsemen were just, maybe they didn't understand why Ole wanted to sit up in the bleachers and cheer his son on to the state regional finals somewhere here in Georgia, rather than be running where the horsemen thought he should be, because at that point, maybe he'd be a world champion. Now, Ole, you've been a little stubborn all your life, a little pig-headed sometimes. Sometimes you got to sit you down and explain the facts of life. Now, what happened is no big thing. But to make things right, Ole, I think you owe the horseman an apology. You owe Tully Blanchard an apology, and maybe you owe me an apology. I don't know. But I think if you're still in the building, and I'm told that you're here somewhere, I think, Ole, in all fairness, if you just come out here, and I think it needs to be public because you took the opportunity to do it in front of who knows how many millions of people. All I'm asking, Ole, is get out here. Don't put me on the spot and embarrass me any further. Get out here and tell the whole world you put your foot in your mouth, you're sorry, I'll smooth it over with Blanchard, I'll smooth it over with everybody else, and it's over with. Now, don't keep me waiting. How much time's left?
I don't know. We don't only have a couple of minutes left in the program.
Apologize to me.
And you talk about the unity of the horsemen? Okay, we'll see about the unity of the horsemen right now.
We don't need to see any interviews. We need to get Ole Anderson out here. If I got to buy some time to keep this program on the air, I'll do it. How much is it quick? Somebody get a phone call.
We're about a minute now.
I got money.
I know that. I know you have money.
Somebody call Turner. Cancel the news or whatever you want. I'll stay on the air here till we get Ole Anderson out here. If it takes 5 minutes or 10 minutes, we got money too, right? We're staying on the air. I don't care what he is. At this point, he's embarrassing.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Ole, thank you very much for coming out.
I'll tell you like it is. I don't appreciate you talking about my son, and as far as I'm concerned, you're a scumbag.
Whoa!
You and Ole are going to get
forget about the unity you're talking about right there with Ole Anderson having it for Four Horsemen.
Wow.
It's better when you had to see the video of that. It's pretty awesome.
So that's when he left the Horsemen?
That's when, yeah, he left and Luger came in.
Yeah, because he didn't... The way I remember is there was a battle royal, right? And J.J. Dillon was in there?
That's when Luger left the Horsemen.
That's when Luger left.
Yeah, he eliminated J.J. Dillon, and that's where there was his babyface turn.
And when that happened, Barry Windham took his spot?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I'm learning. All right, excellent. All right, so let's go to... Worldwide, right after that, there was...
You know what's so awesome about these periods back then is they had so many different shows.
Yes, and they were different.
We didn't have just like two main shows. You had like five. You had the Saturday night show. You had the Power Hour on Friday, the main event on Sunday, and you had like Worldwide was syndicated. You had NWA Pro Wrestling, which was syndicated. I mean, it was just a shitload of different wrestling to watch back then. It's sad. Looking at it today.
And they were all different shows.
Yeah, they were all different shows.
Yes, it was. I liked it a lot, though. I really did.
It'd be during the weekend. I'd get at least, during one weekend, I'd probably get, it seemed like I'd get like 10 hours of wrestling shows every weekend. Because I'd be able to watch like Mid-South or USWA or Memphis or, you know, World Class. They had so many different options to watch.
I would like to do for us to review Memphis one time. Cause I have, or at least not necessarily Memphis, but USWA. I have quite a bit of that footage that I've watched, and it's great. All right, let's go on to that worldwide. Let's talk about the big things that are going on.
It was Crispy Cruz, as Terry Funk would say, and Terry Funk were on commentary. Feature comments from Woman with her bodyguard Nitron. You know who Nitron was, right?
I do not.
Michael Myers.
Really?
And what was the thing from the first X-Men film? What was the guy with the beast or something like that?
Yes.
You know, the real big, tall guy? That's Nitron.
No, I know exactly who you're talking about, yes.
Yeah, that was Nitron. It was, and he was also Big Sky. You remember Big Sky, no?
Yes, I remember Big Sky, Big Sky very distinctly, too.
Yeah, I think his real name was Tyler Mane or something like that.
Gosh,
he's been in a bunch of movies.
Yeah, I did not know that he had that. Like that far back of a tie into wrestling.
Yeah. It was his first start with here in WCW as the bodyguard. He didn't last long and he was gone. Then he came back a few years later and teamed with Vinny Vegas, I think. as Good Scott.
Vinny Vegas was awesome.
He had interviews with Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin, Brian Pillman. Chris Cruz conducted an interview with Flair and Ole Arn Anderson, with the officially inviting Sting to join the Four Horsemen. And also had an interview with the Road Warriors, who, along with Paul Ellering, who claimed they proved their dominance by winning the Starrcade 89 tournament. And when the first match, you had Brian Pillman being the Galaxian number one, who I think was Ken Wayne, who was tag partners with Danny Davis as the Nightmares in, like, I think Memphis and, like, Continental Wrestling and stuff like that.
Yes, Ken Wayne, whose dad is Buddy Wayne. And it's not the Buddy Wayne that Brian Alvarez knows. The old Brian. But it's the coincidence that they're both called Buddy Wayne.
It's the other drugged out Buddy Wayne, and not the drugged out Buddy Wayne we know.
Yes, exactly.
I'm kidding. Then we had Samu and the Samoan Savage, who was the Samoan Savage was the Tonga Kid. Do you remember the Tonga Kid?
Yes, of course, of course.
You remember the Islanders with Haku?
Yes. Oh, man. I loved Samu. I liked him more in the Head Shrinkers. Like, when he was in the Head Shrinkers, I was a bigger fan of him.
Fatu? He and Fatu?
Yeah. Yes.
I love the Samoan teams. They were always, I always like watching them.
There's a big hair, and, like, I love that, like, no matter who it is, Samoan, like, I would love for, like, at WrestleMania, John Cena to hit the Rock with a chair and him no-sell it because it's his head, and, like, him, you know, be Samoan. That'd be fantastic.
I don't know why Fatu was not in there. I think they were just rotating them out as, like, a three-man team at this point. You know, Samu, the Samoan Savage, and Fatu. They would do six-mans and sometimes just other tag team matches. And they had with them the Big Kahuna, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. And they defeated...
That's a horrible name, though, the Samoan Savage. Why couldn't he be, you know, something else? Maybe the Samoan Kid or something like that? Or
give him a name like Samu or Fatu had. I mean, it's not like it's hard to come up with one. And they defeated Rick Fargo and William Bell at 27 seconds. And then they had the Midnight Express Bobby and the Stan Lane with Jim Cornette defeated Agent Steele and Trent Knight in 2 minutes and 20 seconds when Lane pinned Knight after the double goozle. And I think that's when Lane went, like, under the guy's leg and Bobby Eaton hit him with the clothesline or something like that.
We're going to be playing a game next week for everybody to call in, and it's going to be called WCW Jobber or Porn Star, Male Porn Star. And you got to tell us if it's a male porn star or WCW jobber, because it's gonna be, cause Agent Steele and Trent Knight both sound like they could be gay porn stars. And they all do. They all sound like that. Are you telling me that, you know, William Bell or even like some of the other, like their lower card team, you know what I mean? Like Jack Victory and Rip Morgan can both be porn star names. It's fantastic.
Brad Armstrong is actually a wrestler and a porn star name.
I did not know that.
Yes.
All right.
Not that I've ever seen porn before, but I've heard
of
stories. Then we go to Norman beat Joe Cruz.
Yes.
And he chased Teddy Long, who appeared at ringside, because he had just broken up with Teddy Long, and he had... He was good friends with Dr. Death Steve Williams. He always called him my good buddy, Dr. Steve. And during the match, they had a split-screen video aired with Kevin Sullivan comparing Norman's chances with Woman to that of the Titanic sinking. Okay.
And Ric Flair beat Eddie Gilbert by reversing a small package. Eddie Gilbert, at this time, this was kind of a... He's been wrestling forever, Eddie Gilbert, at this point. And
yeah, at least like 10 years or so.
Yes, because that's like a little-known thing. Eddie Gilbert was the person that was being attacked when Sergeant Slaughter turned babyface.
Is it, when was this? Because like, I wasn't watching. I'm trying to remember.
It was, I think it was like 85, 84, 85. Eddie Gilbert was the person that was getting attacked.
Huh.
By, I think, maybe the Iron Sheik or someone.
Might
and,
have been. Because I know he was like an intense talent in WWF in those early 80s.
Yeah, so then, so Sergeant Slaughter came out to defend the country, you know, because
mm-hmm.
he's an American, he's a soldier. Yeah, so Eddie Gilbert at that point had been, you know, in wrestling for quite a period of time. But
man, he was, I always liked Gilbert. He was a good. I like him better as a heel. He was great as a heel, like kind of the manager that could wrestle, you know. And
yeah,
he was very, very good and one of the better minds in the business too.
Yeah, he always wanted to be. I've heard this phrase several times. He wanted to be the Jerry Lawler of the East.
Yeah. Hey, that's how he patterned himself after, was Jerry the King Lawler.
I never panned out for him, poor guy.
Nuh-uh. There's another one
and,
that passed away too early.
Yes, and Woman and Nitron appeared ringside and watched the remainder of the contest before leaving ringside upon the finish.
Yep.
So
let's go to, I think this next one, I think this was the first WCW Saturday night show of 1990. It included opening comments from Teddy Long regarding the debut later of the new Skyscrapers. They had Jim Ross and Kevin Sullivan on commentary. They were a pretty good team. I always liked Kevin Sullivan. He's a good talker.
And the main event, or the one of the premier matches on this, they at least announced, it wasn't on this show, but for the Clash of Champions coming up, and I remember this, is Flair, Sting, and Arn Anderson against Bud Sawyer, the Dragon Master, and Great Muta.
Inside of a
cage. Inside of a cage.
Yeah.
Next Clash. Sid was out of the Skyscrapers, according to Teddy Long. He replaced him.
Pat Steiner gave him I think that Blockbuster suplex where he flips backwards, and I think he punctured his lung.
Well, you know, it takes a lot of guts to stay a skyscraper. So, Mean Mark Callis was now going to be the permanent team member of Dan Spivey.
And he was
so
much better. He was so much better.
Of course.
He was, this was like his, I mean, he'd been in Memphis, but this was like his big, first big time on the national stage. And he was very good. I could tell he was going to be something. You know, he could walk the ropes and do all his flying stuff.
Oh, yeah. And he had a hell of a match against Brian Pillman. I'm sure it's going to be coming up soon, where he was building up his match for against Lex Luger for the U.S. title. He had a hell of a match with Brian Pillman. I actually watched that match today.
And it's cool watching these guys from when they first start, and now you know he's like one of the all-time greats.
Yep.
And The Undertaker. Hmm.
Yeah.
They had Pro Wrestling Illustrated editor Bill Apter recognized Gordon Solie as the winner of the Editor's Award. Scott Steiner was the winner of the Most Improved Wrestler of the Year. And Ric Flair won the Wrestler of the Year Award. He also won the Wrestler of the Decade Award in the Decade issue as well. So
he deserved both.
Yeah.
He deserved both.
This was always cool. I liked it when the Pro Wrestling Illustrated would give out the awards on TV.
Yeah, it was.
I always like seeing Bill Apter, and you know,
I always liked that. Yeah, and it was cool. It was cool seeing because I would always read those magazines, and they did that for a couple of years. And I always read those magazines. It's cool to see them say hey, they really are part of it. So then you'd really want to you'd want to believe that those gimmicked interviews were real. Interviews with. How could you imagine having that job of making up fake interviews? Those telephone calls.
That would be kind of fun, you know. Or just writing those fake story angles and stuff in the magazine.
Oh yeah, there was one
Bill
where Lex Luger declared war on Japan
after he joined the NWO, and he stole the list of the prospective NWO members and he published them in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated. There's Shawn Michaels and Sabu and a few other people or something on that list.
Yeah, they sold them. Pro Wrestling Illustrated got all the dirt. They had to. They had to. So.
Yeah. There would also be, and he was kind of doing, he was doing a few with Lex Luger at this point too. Lex Luger was a heel. Lex Luger was a great heel at this point. He was.
Yes,
awesome.
He was. He was. But Lex Luger at this time, and I remember this. Luger was a heel, but he was starting, the crowd was starting to turn, right?
I don't really know if they were starting to turn, or I don't even think they had it in plan to turn until the thing with Sting happened at the Clash.
I'm trying to say that Capital Combat, what month was that? February?
That was May.
It's May. Okay, so we're a couple months away from that, because I loved how all that worked out. I loved how it all come together. So keep going. Sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Jim Ross did an interview with Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson about the return to the NWA. Rock and Roll Express was fine. I was never that big of a fan. I liked the Rockers better.
Yeah, the thing about the Rock and Roll Express, and they came out at Capital Combat with a jukebox, okay?
Oh yeah, that was cheesy.
And that just proved that at the time WCW had these old ass dated ideas, and then when they think rock and roll, they think fucking 1965 rock and roll of, like, you know, the jukebox and, you know, that kind of.
I'm thinking rock and roll in 1990. I'm thinking like the Steiner Welcome to the Jungle theme song. You know,
yes.
Things Guns N' Roses.
You should be thinking. That's what you should be thinking, but they don't. They think the jukebox, and that was so horrible. And it was like, it was kind of driving off to the side and everything. What horrible.
I watched the Clash of the Champions from '88 when the Rock and Roll Express, they made a big return to one of the Clash of the Champions. And they're running down the ringside, you know, all the fans are going crazy, and Robert Gibson, he just trips and falls over the ring railing. It's like one of those embarrassing things, like you're walking in the hall at school and you trip or something, and everybody sees it.
that happened to Ultimo Dragon at a WrestleMania, and it happened to That happened to Psychosis at Bash of the Beach 1996.
It happened to the Midnight Rider at TNA. It was Dusty Rhodes. He came over the railing and he fell down.
that's so great. One thing that kind of I thought hurt the Rock and Roll Express, to me at least, was, I mean, in the 80s they were heartthrobs. They were. But by 1990, the road had owned them. They were, like, Robert Gibson was kind of getting a little fat. Like, not like fat, like knee fat. I'm talking about fat, like he's let himself go a little bit. Like someone's dad. Like, he had the beer gut. And he tried hiding it by, you know, putting his tights up to his nipples and shit. But it didn't work. And Ricky Morton kind of was doing the same thing. He was getting a little bit of a gut. And he was also, like, I think he was doing some hard drugs, so some of his teeth were coming out a little bit. So,
dude, I saw him in the main event of that pay-per-view last year with Kevin Nash.
Yes, I cannot believe you ordered that.
I ordered it because they promised me a Mulkey's versus the Midnight Express match, and they swerved me and didn't do it. And
did you,
God,
did you
and he still has the hair from the 80s, and just looks horrible.
Did you hear about that card that was last night? It was... There was a Balls Mahoney versus Marty Jannetty match.
I saw something about that. Yeah, I did.
I want to find out when I can order that, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to order that show, because that's pretty awesome. And Sid showed, of course.
And Jim Ross conducted an interview with Lex Luger about his challenge to Ric Flair, in which Lex Luger said he had been a trendsetter since day one and gained huge success in only 4 years in the business, which is true. And it was inevitable that he would be world champion. He eventually became WWE champion, but it wasn't like it should have been.
No, that was at Super Brawl 1991. Not Super Brawl.
No,
Great American Bash.
Great American Bash.
Yeah, we'll get that. We'll get to that when we But boy, that was very bad.
Yeah.
It was very, very bad. Because it involves Harley Race coming to the ring. You can't understand what he's saying. Then he motions something where it looks like he's saying, like, hey, Lex, after this match, I'm going to fuck you. Because he doesn't, like, think it's supposed to be – it's supposed to be telling him to do the pile driver, but it does not look like that at all. It looks like, hey, I'm going to fuck you after this match. And then he does the pile driver, and then they walk away together, and Mr. Hughes is right behind him.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay.
Jim Ross in an interview with Michael Hayes, and he said Freebirds would dominate the 80s. They dominated the 80s, and they did the same in the 90s. I like the Freebirds at this point, Jimmy Garvin and Michael Hayes. They were very good.
The reason I like this version of the Freebirds was because Jimmy Jam was awesome. Because his fucking hair, Couture, that hair was just tremendous. And he was, I don't know, man. Like, that hair, anytime I would see him just, because he would always tease it, you know, and it was huge as is. So he's teasing it, trying to make it even bigger. God. Jimmy Jam was awesome. And the whole story of that was, they were all in Dallas together, right? Like, Freebirds and...
They've been in Dallas, in the mid-80s, like, in around, I think, 84. Maybe some 85, they were there together. He was kind of like an honorary Freebird when they were there, because he was always he just had that association with them. So made sense for him to be in there.
Yeah.
And they were feuding with Brian Pillman and Tom Zink at this time, and they just formed their team, and they were bringing the U.S. Tag Team titles back at this point. They had been vacated the year before, and I always liked the second. He had such a good tag team division. Made sense to have two sets of titles.
Oh, of course. Like, that tag division is the best tag division possibly ever at the point in time. I mean, when was there a better era? There was – I really liked the tag division in WCW in, like, 1996. I liked that a lot. But do you remember when the Public Enemy were the tag champs?
Yes, but I probably shouldn't.
Oh, I wish that didn't happen because it ended up being the Harlem Heat that dropped the titles to Hall and Nash, right?
Yeah.
Harlem Heat was
I remember they had a bunch of good teams. They had the Steiners, they had the Nasty Boys, they had Fire and Ice of Scott Norton and Ice Train. And,
they were good, too.
Yeah, they were a good team. And, yeah, Harlem Heat. I never saw Harlem Heat as a great tag team.
They were good, though.
Stevie Ray was so terrible. And Booker T was so good, but I just never saw them as that good of a tag team. Because Stevie Ray.
Face of Fear?
Shit. Face of Fear, one of my favorites.
Face of Fear, so great. One of my favorite teams ever. Oh, they're so good.
Then Freebirds ended their interview by saying there weren't just two Freebirds, but there were four, I guess, talking Buddy Roberts and Terry Gordy. Terry Gordy had been in earlier that year, I mean, the year before. When they first brought Jimmy Garvin in as a Freebird, and then he left to go back to Japan. And they did a promo with a woman, and she wants Flair in her camp. And his first match was NWA World Tag Team Champions Rick and Scott Steiner defeated Pat Rose and Rick Fargo in 2 minutes and 3 seconds with when Rick pinned Fargo with an overhead suplex. Prior to the match, Scott took a young man from the crowd, sat him on the ring apron, and let him hold on to his title belt. And during the bout, it was announced that the Steiners would put their titles on the line against the Masks of Doom at the Clash of the Champions.
And Pat Rose is known for his hilariously large, not necessarily large, but he has a rose tattoo on his arm. And also, he's a fisherman now. He's a professional fisherman.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he is. I talked to him a couple of times via different, like, I got his email address through an older wrestler that I knew, and I contacted him about doing a radio show once, and he didn't really want to do a radio show, but he answered, like, a lot of my questions that I had for him.
And I know he was on Carlos Stern's show maybe once.
Yeah, but
he was a good enhancement guy.
Oh, yeah. a lot of those guys in the 80s were.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys. And speaking of, not really speaking of, but Buddy Wayne, I talked about Buddy Wayne earlier. I've watched a couple of his stuff on YouTube. He was pretty good.
Yeah.
For an enhancement guy. Yeah, that's why they kept bringing it back, I think.
Yeah, when they fly you in, and when you're an enhancement, they fly you in, that's something good.
And Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane with Jim Cornette, they beat Ned Brady and Paul Drake when Bobby Eaton pinned Drake with one hand. He beat him with one hand after their rocket launcher move.
Nasty
I love that
Ned
move.
Brady.
Nasty Ned Brady. And didn't Nasty Ned Brady, didn't he wrestle Mick Foley at a clash once?
I don't know if he was at a Clash of the Champions. Maybe he was one of his tag team partners that he turned on.
He was one of his tag team partners. That's what it was.
And probably coming up here and like when one of these shows, probably there might have been before that. But Norman pinned Bob Cook by reversing a sunset flip into a sit down splash prior to the bout. Norman cut an insert promo on his giving woman a painting the following day on the main event. Bob Cook was very good. He was Dustin Rhodes' very first opponent in his first match.
Really?
Yes.
I'm saying that about the Dustin Rhodes. I knew he was good at handsome talent. I love those guys. See, there's none of those guys are around anymore. See, I wish it was still the era where guys could go around and make $500 $200 for just to put someone over, just so they have enough money for their hotel room and some blow and a hooker, just to go to the next town and put someone else over. I miss that era.
Yeah. They got paid more than the stars did. Stars didn't even get paid for TV, I don't think.
Yes. Maybe in WCW. I know in WWF they didn't because there was...
They were getting over on their TV, so you're like getting paid anyway. So you're getting the exposure. So I guess that's how they saw it.
And next we're going to move on to Bud Sawyer and the Dragon Master beating Ricky Nelson and Rick Ryder. But before we go to that, let's talk about that Bud Sawyer and the Dragon Master and Great Muda and the whole JTEX Corporation.
Yeah, I think Gary Hart had just left at this point.
Yes, he did. He was gone right at the end of 89, I thought, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which I always liked him. He was good. I like Gary Hart.
Yeah, Gary Hart was an awesome manager. And I've always loved that name for a team, the JTEX Corporation. I always thought that sounded so cool. Who was Dragon Master?
He was Kendo Nagasaki. Have you ever heard of him?
Kendo Nagasaki. He used to work
like in Florida. He did some stuff in like Crockett territory, doing like a Japanese gimmick, kind of like a Kabuki.
Okay. All right. When Sawyer pinned Ryder with a splash off the top rope, and it was after Dragon Master gave him a jumping tombstone, but during the match they announced that Ric Flair would face Bobby Eaton. And Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace, yes, that is John Laurinaitis, would face Jack Victory and Rip Morgan the following day on the main event. And the following week, they're telling us again that the Great Muda is going to be defending his TV title against Arn. So they're building that up pretty good, that match.
Yep.
All right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Brian, I was going to go to the next match, but you could go ahead.
I was just going to go to the next match.
Okay, Brian Pillman and Tom Zink beat the Forever Jobbers, Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker and Lieutenant James Earl Wright. They were there forever.
Yeah, the State Patrol.
Buddy
Lee was really there forever because he was pretty much there to the end, working at the power plant.
Yes, yes. I love hearing on the Cabana podcast, they were talking about, he had an interview a couple weeks ago with Jimmy Yang. And Jimmy Yang, like, was like 17 years old right when he signed with WCW. He turned 18 and he got there. And he was just saying that he learned absolutely nothing at the power plant because they would just make them do calisthenics and stuff. And
hey, so like they just made them quit or throw up.
Yes, which is
that's what Batista said. Batista went there, and he said they tried to run him out, and I think he even ended up going to like the Wild Samoans training or something like that.
Good for Batista. Good for Batista.
I don't see how what you get out of it. Most of these people are just like old farts that this was the shit that was done to them like back in the 80s and stuff when they were breaking in, so they got to do it to everybody else. I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't like stuff like that.
I'm not a big fan of that either.
Yeah.
All right,
Jack
Victory and Rip Morgan with Lord Littlebrook beat Larry Santo, another good jobber, and Sean Regal at 349 when Victory pinned Regal following a double face first suplex. I loved those insert, the little insert promos where, you know, either before or during the match, they like Littlebrook cut a promo talking about the match that they're going to have the next day with Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace, the Dynamic Dudes. I love that stuff. And this is the first match of Dan Spivey and Mark Callis as a team, right?
Yeah.
The new Skyscrapers defeated Agent Steel and Randy Harris. Agent Steel got himself a new partner. Agent Steel, I knew that him and Trent Knight weren't meant to be as a team. He was much more comfortable with Randy Harris. I always thought.
Yeah, me too.
And Spivey cut a promo in the little had an interview with Jim Ross. But he cut a promo on the Road Warriors, and Teddy Long cut a promo on the injured Sid Vicious. So they're so they're building Sid to come back as a babyface.
I guess they probably didn't know what they were going to do with time with him, so they just had to, you know, kind of.
Why even mention him anymore if that wasn't the plan? You know.
Yeah.
All right, Cactus Jack. Cactus Jack, him and his partner Lee Scott.
Lee Scott, who was the son of George Scott, who was the booker in WCW at once.
Yes.
I think he was. They always said he was a locker room stooge.
Yes. I've heard that before, too. They lost to the Dynamic Dudes, Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace. There was a... the side slam dropkick combo. And after the bout, the Cactus was doing that gimmick of he'd beat his partner up and would do the elbow. He might not have done it then, but he was doing it all the time.
Yeah, this was, I had seen him like in World Class, like in like 88 and stuff like that. I'd seen Cactus, so I knew who he was. And yeah, I thought this was neat. They were doing something with him.
Oh, God. This was. The big part of this show was Hacksaw Higgins made an appearance. Good old Hacksaw Higgins. Are you fucking kidding me? Hacksaw Higgins? Tell me about Hacksaw Higgins, Contreras.
I don't know that much about it. I think he worked in Florida. I think he worked a little bit in Japan.
Okay.
That's about it. All I know about him.
He lost to Steve Williams and with the Oklahoma Stampede by 4 minutes. There was Tommy Rich was going to be wrestling Agent Steel, and Cactus Jack came out and whipped Agent Steel's ass. So then Tommy Rich said he was going to fight Cactus Jack, and of course beat him.
Yeah, they did this like a couple of other times with like Brian Pillman and Sting, where Cactus would come out and beat up the opponent, and then he'd get beat by one of those guys.
The SST, the Samoan SWAT team, with Oliver Humperdinck and, of course, Samoan Savage. They beat the their formidable opponents for the evening. The Italian Stallion, who I remember when I was young, I loved the Italian Stallion because they would always talk about how much spaghetti he could eat.
He's the world spaghetti-eating champion.
Yes, and Brody Chase, when Fatu pinned Chase with a splash on the top rope.
I think Hayes Day and also trained the Hardy Boys.
No, we didn't. In their book, they said that he didn't train him. They trained them. They were self-trained. And he got
them booked in places.
Yes, yes. Did you notice, like, in WCW, there's, like, a common trend of, like, almost every single match ends with either a crossbody, a roll-up, or a splash off the top rope? And what's the last match?
The main event was Sting and Arn Anderson defeated the Galaxians. And in 3:57, Anderson scored the pin with the DDT after Stinger hit the Stinger Splash. And the on-screen graphic spelled Arn's name as A-R-N-E. It's like when somebody would spell Ric Flair's name R-I-C-K, I said, you dumb shit, you can't spell Ric Flair's name like that.
Yes, of course. Why would you?
Now that next week, the player would be a guest on the Louisville Slugger with Jim Cornette, which was another Piper Spit type of segment.
And also, Cactus Jack would face Lee Scott. The Rock and Roll Express would be in action. And Jim Ross just interviewed Flair, Arn, Ole, and Sting about the New Horsemen. And we got about 15 minutes left, Couture.
Okay. Get through this. There was only one match listed I saw for the one result for the NWA main event the next day, and that was Ric Flair and Bobby Eaton at 17 minutes and 24 seconds after hitting both Eaton and Cornette with Cornette's tennis racket behind the referee's back. I'm sure this was probably a very good match.
Oh, I'm sure it was. It's almost 20 minutes.
The Midnight Express, they were really like the Ric Flair version of the tag team, of a tag team version of Ric Flair, if you think about it.
The best part about the Power Hour the next week was the Wrestling World, the Wrestling News Network, and he was talking about Kerry Von Erich had left Dallas. He's looking for somewhere else to go. And that he was
and
gonna
he had a date scheduled to come and join WCW, and he no-showed, and they didn't want him no more.
Yep.
I think he was maybe going to be in that spot Luger got at Wrestle War.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he was. Yes. What happened to Sting? How did Sting get hurt?
We know he got hurt kind of on that cage of the Clash of the Champions.
Oh, yeah, he did.
I think when he got pulled down by Donut Doug Dillinger or somebody.
Yes, he got hurt, so he had to get the surgery, and then Luger ended up stepping in.
Yeah, they didn't have anybody else for him to fight for a Flair face. They didn't have any baby faces.
Oh. And that was like the same exact night that the four horsemen turned on him, right?
Yeah. That's exactly what happened.
That's just poor timing is what that is.
Yeah. We'll probably get to that next week.
Yeah, we will get to that next week. Yeah, because we won't take as many phone calls next week, because that was the first half hour of the show.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just start with the show. Let's finish with this show.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Ric Flair versus Eddie Gilbert. I think this was the match that they showed the other week on, like, the main event or the Power Hour the week before or something like that. I think it was the same match. They did that sometimes. They had Kevin Sullivan as a guest on Funk's Grill, in which Terry Funk questioned Sullivan's attack on Norman, during which Sullivan said Norman shared some of the qualities of Dory Funk Jr., and Funk claimed the attack on Norman was like kicking a helpless dog. Steve Williams pinned Brody Chase with the Oklahoma Stampede in 7 minutes, and Arn Anderson pinned the NWA TV champion, the Great Muta, to win the title in 13 minutes. When Muta went for the moonsault, and Anderson lifted his knees, and Muta landed on his knees, and then Anderson hit the DDT and got the clean 1-2-3. And Buzzsaw and Dragon Master then after the match challenged for the next week, and so the next week was going to be Arn defending the title against Buzz Sawyer. This was the first title change ever on the Power Hour.
It was a big deal, though. It was, Mark.
Yeah.
And I have
Plus, Muta is the guy that had the big streak going, too. I mean, he had gotten beat at the, like, Starrcade, but you'd never seen him beat on TV, on the regular TV before, so.
And Arn held on to that title for a while, right?
Oh, he held on to it. I think he didn't lose it until December when he lost to the Z-Man.
Yes, which is that's bullshit. As good as Z-Man was, I mean, come on.
They should have just had Great Muta take Sting's place against Flair. Would have been a good big face.
He was so over, too.
Yeah. I don't know why he left at this point. He pretty much ended up leaving, like, right after that Clash of the Champion.
Yeah, that was it for him.
Well, yeah, he didn't come back. Well, he came back for the tag team tournament at Starrcade at the end of the year.
Yes, with him and Masa Saito, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe it was the thing where, you know, New Japan sent him over to get better, because they do that now. They still do that. They did that with, you know, all those guys. Even Masa Chono ended up going all over. You know, they'd send them all over just to get better. So maybe, you know, it was just time to be full-time in Japan.
It was just weird that Starrcade, he got, like, jobbed out in all three matches. He got pinned, like, twice and got disqualified in one match. And
Well, Mark Henry's been losing a lot, mostly, and maybe he's on his way out the door, that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And then the same thing happened, like, the Samoa Swat team, did they even win the match at that Starrcade?
They beat Doom, I believe. They beat
did
Doom
they really?
In one of the matches. Yeah, they beat Doom and then lost
Doom?
In the final.
I thought one team didn't get any points.
I don't think Doom got any points. Doom didn't win any matches, I don't think. Well, maybe they did. Maybe they beat the Steiners by count out or something. I can't remember. I know Muta had no points in that thing because he lost three matches.
That's not fair.
No, I think maybe it was the Samoans beat the Steiners by count out, which is what put the Samoans ahead of them. Doom had no points throughout the whole show.
And that's how the Steiners ended up losing to the Road Warriors.
No, the Road Warriors lost to the Steiners.
No, I mean, but the Road Warriors won the whole thing.
Yeah.
The Road Warriors were nowhere near as good as the Steiners, in my opinion.
No. Steiners were... Plus, the Steiners could do a job every now and then. Road Warriors never did. That's why I didn't like them that much. They couldn't really get into... They were more like an attraction, you know, just come in and throw some guys around and do the big Doomsday device. But I don't know. In a way, it's kind of like The Undertaker. And, you know, The Undertaker streak, you're never going to see him lose. So, I don't know.
I liked that. I liked, like, the Steiners aspect I liked was that, like even Doom, they put over Doom.
Yeah, and they were kind of like a next generation version of the Road Warriors in a way because, you know, they were better. They were just so much better. They could do all the wrestling moves, which Road Warriors couldn't do.
Yes, the Road Warriors did. Doom, like one Silva was saying earlier, Doom really would bump. Like, they bump for the Steiners like crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, God. What a I can't wait to get to that match. I'm going to watch it again, literally, like right when we're done with this. All right, so next week we'll return to our Sunday night, if that's okay with you. We'll return and we'll do a show next week. We will do,
hopefully we'll get to the Clash of the Champions, do a review of that.
We'll get to the Clash of the Champions. We'll do more review next week, less phone calls, because, you know, maybe we'll do some phone calls at the end next week, just because it takes up too much time. And I really want to get through this stuff because it's good stuff. I want to discuss and I want to learn more. So, it's been about 90 minutes now, or close to it, man. All right, so next week, next Sunday, we will return, 10 o'clock, just like we did this week. We'll discuss that. And Katrina and I were talking about doing a WrestleMania show after WrestleMania. So, that should be fun. We'll maybe do a couple hours after it's over. We'll review it, save, talk about everything that happened, all that stuff. So it should be good. Good next couple of weeks, sure.
Yeah, I think so. Looking forward to it.
All right, man. So we'll be back next week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks everybody that called in too. And it's been a really good time. So I'll talk to everybody later.